Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
The only persons to whom I am irreplaceable are my husband and children. I am my kid's only mom, and I'm my husband's only wife, and it is my great blessing to be able to serve them.
The United States is not and never will be at war with Islam. Bin Laden was not a Muslim leader. He was a mass murderer of Muslims.
For as much as William and Catherine have consented together in holy wedlock, I pronounce that they be man and wife together in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost.
If you are going to church to learn practical tips for healthy living, I'll tell you what St. Paul said. If we are to hope for Christ only in this world, then we are to be the most pitied of all men.
Homeschool families love Issues, etc. We have issues.
One of the most contentious, well, I wish it was more contentious, but it should be more contentious issues in the church today is the so-called role of women. It's not really a role. It is actually a we should say, place. A role implies that there's some sort of a slot that everybody fits into. But when we talk about how God orders the world and God orders creation, the natural question is, how do men and women respectively, not as indistinct, interchangeable people, but respectively, fit into the order that God has made in creation and in His church? We're going to be taking up the subject of women in the church in particular. 2 Timothy 2, a troublesome passage on women in worship, remaining in silence, says Paul, with Dr. Charles Geeshan in the second hour of Issues Etc. today. In the meantime, on this Friday afternoon, May the 13th, coming to you live, we'll do what we normally do on Friday afternoons. Listener email, Issues Etc. comment line, which is chock full of comments from our listeners, and then we'll pick blog of the week. After our conversation with Dr. Geeshan, again back to our regular Friday routine, we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week with you. That's four sound bites that we put together from this week's audio. We'll play them for you, and you get to call, email, send us a tweet, or visit our Facebook fan page and vote and pick soundbite of the week. Now, if you want to listen in advance, you can do so at our website, issuesetc.org. You can vote at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. You can send us a tweet at issuesetc and email talkback at issuesetc.org, or just give us a call live this Friday afternoon, 1-877-623-6943, when we play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. You can also use that phone number anytime in the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943. Always email first. What's up first, Jeff?
This comes from Mark in Minnesota. He says, thinking back some emails I sent you several months ago regarding vestments, clerical collars, and the use of them, I took notice of the recent interview between the new Lutheran Hour speaker and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod President Matt Harrison. Pastor Seltz of the Lutheran Hour is wearing a necktie, Harrison a clerical collar. Each man is exercising his freedom to wear or not to wear clerical garb. With all due respect to the fine service you do offer to our church, the only reason I have raised this issue with you comes from my distinct impression that your program looks down on pastors who do not wear the clerical collar. Somehow non-clerical wearing pastors are not confessional in their theology. I look to the example of Jack and Robert Preuss on this one. Those two men certainly had a reputation for being confessional Lutherans in our synod, even though they did not wear the clerical collar. Thanks for the email, and thanks for listening in Minnesota, Mark.
I don't know where we would have got that impression. I mean, certainly not from any pictures we posted our Facebook fan page, where as often as not, the pastors who sit here at our pastor's roundtable are or are not wearing a clerical collar. And I can tell you right now, I'm not wearing one right now. I wear one very seldom. That's mostly because my day job doesn't involve strictly pastoral duties. Now, when I am on pastoral duty, whether by the absence of my senior pastor or Sunday morning or some other, I guess you could say, official church business, I do wear a clerical collar. I don't dress the way I am now. Right now, I'm wearing NBA basketball shorts, Nike tennis shoes, and an Adidas t-shirt. That's what I wear every day. So I don't know where you'd get the impression that we look down on pastors who don't wear the clerical collar. Now, that's my I'll give you my pastoral perspective on this. The reason when I was a parish pastor full-time, I wore a clerical collar almost all the time. Not all the time, but almost all the time, was because first, I never knew when I would be called to go do something that I needed to do. A hospital call, someone dies, and I wanted to be prepared. Number two, it was a reminder to me, to myself, of what I was called to do and what I was supposed to be doing. It was kind of a matter of discipline, if you will, to remind myself that I'm not here to be somebody's friend or buddy or life coach, but I'm here to be a shepherd of God's flock. That was a reminder there to me. But as far as the show, I don't think we've ever, intentionally given the impression that we look down on pastors who don't wear the clerical collar. I know as many as do as don't. And he mentioned Pastor Matt Harrison. Pastor Matt Harrison is known as the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod for probably appearing publicly in his clerical collar a lot. But I just saw a picture of him speaking at a conference as the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And I don't know what phase of the conference it was, but he was just wearing a kind of a Don Johnson kind of thing going on. He had a suit coat on, but he did the t-shirt with the suit coat, which he can pull off. I can't pull it off. So
obviously, this is an area of Christian freedom. Let me give you a layperson's perspective who's been in numerous meetings with synodical leaders who are pastors. Maybe it's wishful thinking, but I think if they occasionally wore a clerical collar, they might, when they go to the restroom and take a break, look in the mirror and they're just reminded, okay, I'm not some, you know, leader of a management team. I'm not a bureaucrat. I'm not, you know, I'm not a CEO. I'm a pastor, and that's why I'm here.
Well, and that's provided that they actually are pastors.
Right.
You don't want the lay people over there wearing the clerical collars. You know, it's a uniform. That's what it is. It's a uniform like any other uniform. And it's intended to convey to the public, to the person who wears it, that office. If you're a soldier, you wear the uniform because it reminds you and everyone around you in everyday life that you are called to that particular office, small o, to be a soldier, to be a fighting man or woman. Pastors, doctors, judges, heck, even professional athletes, it's there to make a distinction, a proper distinction, and to remind the person what they're there for. I mean, a basketball player that refused to suit up for a game, I'm talking about in the NBA, if he refused to suit up for the game and wanted to wear whatever he wanted to wear, would any coach let him play? I'm asking you, Jeff. Prima donna...
I don't think it's not just in a coach. I don't think an official would allow
right.
him on the
floor. If any prima donna said, hey, everybody knows I'm a basketball player, but I want to wear what I want to wear. He doesn't want to wear the team's uniform, or he goes out and designs his own or something like that. The official wouldn't let him on the court. He'd say, go suit up, then you can play.
But are you using that analogy to say that pastors then have to wear clerical collars?
Absolutely not. I'm simply saying that the uniform is suited to the task that is given to the man. And if I'm mowing my grass, I dress the way I'm dressing right now. If I am preaching, I will wear the uniform of a pastor. I will say, I do have a problem with pastors who won't suit up on Sunday morning. Not who don't. Some don't, but some won't. Pastors who won't suit up on Sunday morning are saying something. They're either saying, I'm so special that I don't need to wear the uniform, or I don't want people to know that I occupy this office, or this office isn't what people think it is. Either way, there's no good reason for a pastor who won't suit up on Sunday morning, if you ask me.
Here's an email from Kathy. I want to say I love your guests, but I would like to hear from some different ones as well. Since I listen so frequently, it's nice if things were mixed up with guests being interviewed. My question is, are there only white men who are confessional Lutherans? There may not be many Latino, Black, or Asian, but it would be nice to see and hear from men and other backgrounds. It might be harder to find these guests, but I'm sure it'd be worth the effort. I know you've worked white women into your shows. This would also be an area to expand to other ethnic groups. You guys do a great job, but this has been something I think about when I scan for past shows to listen to, which I do very often. Thanks again, and thank you for the email, Kathy.
Well, I think it's as much demographic as anything else. The percentage of non-Caucasian, really Midwest people in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and in confessional Christianity in general is fairly low. Certainly in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, very low as a percentage of the total population. That's to do with where most of the churches find themselves. I imagine that where Kathy goes to church, there's a small percentage of non-Caucasian Middle Westerners. And the same is true for the pool of guests that we have. Although it is good advice to look beyond the comfort zone of our regular pool of guests, which we try to do as much as we can, and to try and seek that kind of different demographic, maybe ethnic perspective on some of the issues that we talk about. It's good advice. Very good advice. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, it's Friday afternoon, May the 13th, and we got some more email in front of us. We have Issues Etc. blog of the week coming up. Jeff very dutifully picked his blog before we came on the air. Dr. Charles Geeshan will join us in the second hour of the program. We'll talk about that troublesome passage about women remaining in silence in the church. Maybe quietness in the church is a better word. And then we'll play Issues Etc., soundbite of the week. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. You can send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or vote in advance for Issues Etc. soundbite of the week at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Independent and in the black for 2 years and running, you're listening to Issues Etc.
The 500th anniversary of the Lutheran Reformation is fast approaching. We have such a rich history as Lutherans, and many people don't realize that. The CLCC offers a seminar called Your Reformation Walk that teaches that rich heritage and helps you appreciate it. The CLCC also offers other seminars designed to help laity learn to appreciate what Lutherans believe, teach, and confess. So invite us to your church. Visit theclcc.org and get details on scheduling a seminar for your church today.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
What I think we're seeing is a disconnect between our attraction to the drama and the pageantry of weddings and our aversion to the commitment and hard work that marriage requires.
This is for us to defend the faith, to continue the Christian thought, but also to bequeath on to our children.
So Smith has to set these plates down, fight off these attackers, grab the plates again, take off running, and his mother says he ran at the top of his speed, carrying the gold plates under his arm on three separate occasions.
If God could give him the faith in the coming Christ, then God can certainly, by the power of that same Holy Spirit, give us that resurrection faith too, and we no less than Job can know that our Redeemer lives.
Just a brief foretaste of the sound bites that we've laid out for you to vote for Soundbite of the Week coming up here in the last half hour of Issues Etc. In the meantime, listener email and then Issues Etc. blog of the week.
Here's an email from Rocky. Some time ago, someone made a query about you putting something up on your website so people could go back and check on books you had recommended and sponsored as Book of the Month. It's still not there. For your on-demand listeners, it's very frustrating to hear that if we're interested in a certain publication, we should get more information from the website, only to go there and find nothing there and no indication how to find it, writes Rocky.
Well, first of all, right, we do not have a dedicated page for Book of the Month. That is true. But when we recommend a book and we say, click Listen on Demand, the information is always there under Listen on Demand.
I think what they're saying is if you're 3 months behind, you got to know the date. You know what I'm saying? Of your say you listen on your iPod, and you got to know the date, and you got to go back to that date.
For Book of the Month.
Or, you know, no, it wouldn't be there for Book of the Month, would it?
For Book of the Month changes every month, as the name would imply. And the link, which is usually the picture of the book's cover, sits over there on every page with the exception of one at our website. And it changes with the month. Now, if you're listening on demand, which so many of our listeners are, and we say check out our Issues Etc. Book of the Month at our website, issuesetc.org, and you go there and it's not the Book of the Month that you see, I see the problem.
So I was thinking the Listen on Demand page, but it wouldn't be there.
Because when we recommend, say, Alvin Schmidt's book or something like that, and we're interviewing Alvin Schmidt, you go to Listen on Demand, find that interview with Alvin Schmidt, the book link will be there and will remain there. And this is just a matter of, you know, time and energy.
And space.
What we can do.
Okay, by space, explain. There's headings. There's these red headings. If you go to our website, iTunes, and our RSS.
What we've decided to do with regard to the website is have as few sections as possible. We're trying to keep this thing simple. And so we want as few sections as possible. So we don't want to add another heading at the top of the page. We don't want to do that. Now, we can add a dedicated page for Book of the Month, but it would have to appear there as a link in the sidebar or something like that.
Came up with the solution this morning.
And we don't want it hidden. You know, you put enough things in your sidebar and pretty soon.
How about this?
You can't find anything.
The journal category, since we don't come out with it as often as we should, we change it to publications. And so you can find the journal, past journals there, and about Book of the Month.
All right. Problem solved.
Yeah. We've been talking about this for weeks, and it just hit me this morning.
So even though we're on the air, Jeff, you need to send me all the names of the Book of the Months. And I think to be consistent, we got to go all the way back to when we were doing Books of the Month since our return. And it's a very simple matter for me to do that from that point on. You don't need to miss it. Don't send me any links. I'll find the links. Just send me the names of the Books of the Month in order, and I'll get them up.
By the way, I just got an email from my lovely bride, Elizabeth Marie Schwartz. She went to the bicycle shop today. We're having a problem. We like to go on family bike rides. We got a tandem. And then
you have a tandem bike?
Oh, yeah, we have a tandem.
You know, there's a couple in my neighborhood that rides a tandem bike, and you know, one of my little hobbies is to sit on my back porch with a glass of wine and laugh at them. But go ahead.
Oh, we look really funny. Now, think about this. Okay, you have Beth and myself on the tandem. By the way, we don't wear helmets. We're cool. So Beth and I on the tandem. Then we got one of those carrier things in the back. Jack, our 4-year-old, sits in there, but now we got baby Joseph was born on Tuesday of Holy Week. So you got this infant, and then Katie, Emily and Justin all ride their bikes, their own bikes. So think of this entourage. People, you got to see when we ride bikes. I mean, people, like, we're crazy. But so we got this little infant that was born.
I applaud you for the family. I applaud you for the family bike ride. But I don't know, maybe you're more trusting of the traffic situation. I mean, I'm laying aside the whole I don't wear a helmet. That's just stupid. But
the kids do.
Good. But you have a tandem bike with a infant in a trailer behind it, in a bike trailer behind it?
Yes. Yes, we do. But now let me make – here's what we do. Now, typically, we have to take our bikes from our house to the bike trail, okay? What we did – we've only done this once so far. Beth meets us at the bike trail in the van because the bike trail's smooth, okay?
All right.
So we tried it out the first time with little Joey in the back, but we couldn't fit his car seat in because then there was no room for Jack to sit. So we improvised, but she just sent an email that the bicycle shop doesn't have anything for infants to go on bike rides. Imagine that.
Well,
maybe they're saying something.
There's probably a good reason they don't have something to put your infant in while you ride along at 25 miles an hour on a tandem bike, which I've tried to ride a tandem bike one time, which is why I laugh at people who do it, because it's very hard to ride because two people are trying to exercise balance. I'm in favor of infant baptism, but I'm not in favor of infant bicycle trailers. It just seems dangerous to me. Of course, my wife will tell you that I am you wouldn't know this amount about me, Jeff, because you know we work together. But I am actually as worst case scenario as you are, but not with regard to work. Your worst case scenario when it comes to everything related to work. I'm worst case scenario when it comes to everything related to family. Work, I don't care. But when it comes to family, I'm worst case scenario. I just hope since you mentioned him, you probably should announce to the audience, I don't think we've announced it on the air, that Joey actually was born.
Yes, he was born. Yeah. We did have something on Facebook. He was born Tuesday of Holy Week. So I think he'll be like 3 or 4 weeks old this Tuesday.
Wow.
You know, sitting in that delivery room and just think, what happened Tuesday of Holy Week back in 2008? It literally just hit me that, well, Beth is delivering this baby.
I didn't even put the two together,
yeah,
to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Well, God works in mysterious ways.
Oh, yeah.
Just watching the birth of a child. And 3 years earlier, I was unemployed.
You should have named the kid David.
What's that? Yeah, yeah. Actually, the kid is strong. I mean, the kid, when he curls his arms up, you know, and he's like, I have to literally take all the strength I have to pull a hand or an arm back. We should have called him Samson.
That's not a bad name.
Yeah. But anyway, mom, baby's doing fine. I think he was, what was he, Craig? It's about almost 20 inches long and
8.9 pounds.
Yep. And so Joseph Jeffrey Schwartz, Elizabeth Marie won the naming rights. You know, I recommend, men, if you're gonna have that battle over a name, you got to do it before the delivery, because once you see the pain that your wife goes through during delivery, how can you just say no? You can't name.
See,
it,
now
no.
You're making me feel bad, because when our son was born, we'd agreed on the first name, Solomon. We hadn't agreed on a middle name, and I, like a callous rube, watched my wife give birth to this child and then refused to let her give the middle name to the child. I noticed that Craig is very quiet here. Lately, he's very quiet. I think he's holding a grudge. I think he really, really was counting on that fifth Schwartz baby to be a Craig and not a Joey. I think I can see hurt in his eyes.
Yeah, Craig hasn't been the same. Either that, or he's jealous of the amount of time I'm spending with Joey, and I'm not playing, you know, catch with Craig, and you know,
inviting
Frisbee,
Craig to family functions.
Family functions.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Craig, you know, it is possible for you to have one of these of your own. A few steps you got to go through first. You need a ring. You've got the girl. I've already told you I'm licensed to perform marriages in the state of Illinois, so that's taken care of. And after the honeymoon, you can have all the little Craigs you want. You can have all the little Craigs you want.
Yes, hi. This is Chris from Nashville, Tennessee, calling. I have a comment regarding the death of Osama bin Laden. I find it interesting that even though the events of his death occurred in the dark of night in a country halfway around the world, and even though we have not received photographs or any recorded eyewitness testimony, and that the body is nowhere to be found, that if anyone questions whether or not he has been killed, they are instantly labeled a crazy conspiracy theorist. Now, my point in calling is not to dispute whether Osama bin Laden is dead. I don't doubt that for a second. Rather, my point in calling is to point out the hypocrisy in American society, and that it is intellectually acceptable, if not commendable, to question the public life, miracles, crucifixion, and resurrection of Jesus Christ, even though all those events occurred in public for the whole world to see, and that we have written eyewitness testimony of those events. In American society, it's perfectly acceptable to question whether Jesus was a real historical figure. It's acceptable to dismiss his miracles as cheap magician's tricks or faith-healing tricks. And it's fine to dismiss his crucifixion via the swoon theory, or acceptable to dismiss the resurrection by saying that the women went to the wrong tomb or that someone stole his body. All this, even though it goes against the written testimony that we have of eyewitnesses. Just whatever you do, don't question whether Osama bin Laden is dead, even though we have no firsthand account of that. Anyways, just some food for thought. Thanks.
Bye. Smartest listeners in radio, I mean, seeing the inconsistency there, no doubt about it, let's be consistent. And at this point, I believe Osama bin Laden's dead, but at this point, there's a lot more evidence that Jesus was dead and alive again, tangible, first-hand eyewitness evidence, than that Osama bin Laden's dead. And I believe that Osama bin Laden is dead. We'll be right back. I'm coming home. Well, my baby, she wrote me a letter. Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Truth-centered mission outreach. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The Susan G. Komen for The Cure supports breast cancer research. Sadly, their chapters often fund Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest chain of abortion mills. In the last few years, Komen has given millions of dollars to Planned Parenthood. But now they'll have fewer volunteers to help raise money in Michigan. The Knights of Columbus there refuse to have any part of Komen. Also, they don't want their individual members to allow their names to be used with Komen or to participate in any of their functions. Their state board unanimously supported this action. Nationally, the Knights of Columbus deserve tons of credit for where the pro-life movement is today. They have been a constant force in our effort to protect unborn babies and their mothers. I salute them.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
The comment before the break puts me in mind of a couple things. First of all, anybody can call the Issues Etc. comment line anytime with any kind of question, comment. We were talking before about our online and our on-demand listeners. It's ideal for them when they have questions or comments or criticisms, show suggestions. The Issues Etc. comment line for you to use anytime. It will always answer 618-223-8384, 618-223-8384. The other thing it puts me in mind of is we spent about an hour this morning talking to Bart Ehrman. What are we talking here about the books? His latest book is called Forged, where he asserts that much of the New Testament, well over half of the New Testament in particular, I mean, he just dispenses with the Gospels altogether, but the Pauline and Peter's writings are forgeries in the classical sense of the term. They were written by someone else claiming to be Paul or Peter and then passed off that way. Ergo the name forged. What are his previous books again, Jeff? I get them mixed up with other guys.
Oh, man. I can't remember, Todd.
Bart Ehrman, Misquoting Jesus.
Misquoting Jesus is the big one. Yep.
And I think there's another one out there as well. And it was a very interesting conversation. I mean, we do these conversations with people who completely disagree with us on matters like, in this case, the authenticity of the New Testament. And I call them Let the Horse Speak interviews, where we simply ask the questions to have them say what it is they say. What does Bart Ehrman actually say in his book, Forged? And then we have an opportunity, and we'll do this Monday. You do not want to miss this. How are we going to do it, Jeff? We're going to play the entire interview?
Yeah, the entire interview on Monday, and hopefully get a guest, an expert, to respond on Tuesday of next week.
Okay, good. So Monday and Tuesday of this coming week. First, the Bart Ehrman interview will air on Monday. Then Tuesday, guests' schedule allowing, we will have someone to respond to what Ehrman has to say during our interview. But I get all worked up before these things because I want to make sure that I really, truly know what the person actually says. So I spend time reading the book and then formulating questions. So Jeff and I are both like nervous Nellies before we do any of the things. Not so much talking to someone of the stature of Bart Ehrman, but just you want to get it right and you only get one shot. This is actually the second time we've talked with Bart Ehrman.
And thanks once again, proving that the Issues, Etc. is a team outfit. Thanks to Gretchen Passantino and Craig Parton and Angus Manoj and Dr. John Wark Montgomery, who gave us some suggested questions for the interview as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of the things that you do when you want to prepare. Be thoroughly prepared so you don't. What I don't want to do, believe it or not, I know many people wouldn't believe this. What I don't want to do is in any way whatsoever misrepresent what Bart Ehrman or any of the other, what shall we call them, hostile interviews. They're not hostile. But they would be hostile interviews if we wanted to debate them. What we don't want to do is misrepresent what they say. We want to fairly represent what they say rather than make a caricature of it. And the easiest way to do that is just get them on the air and talk to them.
Here's a question from Ken. He says, first, I know you have theological differences with Joyce Meyer, the televangelist. Joyce Meyer is being sued by Sherry Coleman's family over her murder. What does the Bible say about how Joyce Meyer Ministries should respond to the lawsuit? What is the biblical way for Joyce Meyer to resolve this dispute? That's the email from Ken.
It's a great question. First of all, the context here is that, what was it, 3 years ago, almost exactly 3 years ago, Chris Coleman, who was, what, this week found guilty of murdering his wife and his two sons in Columbia, Illinois. It's a town just 9 miles north of where I live. And actually, the trial was held in the town where I live, in Waterloo, Illinois, in Mono County. It's the county seat. So the trial was held there. He was found guilty on the third anniversary of the murders, just coincidentally. And he had worked in some significant position of security for Joyce Meyer Ministries, which is based in St. Louis. Joyce Meyer being one of kind of a word faith teacher s. What would you call her, Jeff? Kind of motivational, but mostly kind of the word faith, a word faith Bible teacher. And she's got an enormous worldwide enterprise going there, and it's based in St. Louis. Well, he worked for security in some capacity for her, and they'd been involved in the testimony phase of the trial. I don't know exactly how. I just saw, you know, footage of Joyce Meyer going in and out of the courthouse at down in downtown Waterloo. Well, yes, the family of the murdered wife and mother reportedly are suing Joyce Meyer Ministries. For what? That is, for what amount and for what reason is unclear. They obviously feel like they have a case here. Maybe they think that Joyce Meyer Ministries knew something about the husband here that they should have told the family. I had heard that there's evidence of cell phone calls being made on a company cell phone that should have been, they should have known about or alerted the police about death threats, things like that. I'm not sure what it is. I'm not a reporter on the case. The question is, that's the context. Here's the question. I think first one is, should the family sue? Let's assume we're talking about Christians suing Christians. Should the family sue? Well, I guess it depends on what they're seeking out of this. If they're seeking money or some other kind of restitution or the truth, I don't think there's anything wrong with pursuing the truth or justice or even remuneration in the courts, even Christians versus Christians. I don't think that there's anything necessarily wrong with that. I know that flies in the face of what many people believe, but I do not think that Paul forbids Christians entering court against one another. He says it not should not be the first resort. And it's kind of a shame you have to. It's a big shame that you have to. How should they respond to it? Well, if there was wrongdoing or negligence or some other misdeed on the part of someone at Joyce Meyer Ministries, they should respond by not fighting it and conceding to the demands. They should settle. They should settle fairly. That's the way they should do it. You know, it's not the going to court that's necessarily a problem. It's the refusal for both parties to seek justice, for both parties to seek the truth, and for both parties to say, well, I run over your Craig's, I'm out mowing Craig's lawn. I run over all of his precious tulips. I mow them all to the ground. He says, I spent X number of dollars putting in my precious tulips. I'm going to sue you. It should never get that far. But if it does get that far, what should my response be? Pay him for the tulips. It was my fault. Admit fault. You know, and then, ironically, you wouldn't even have to go to court. So what should their response be? They should look into the matter. If there was some wrongdoing, negligence, whatever it may be, they should settle with the family.
Hi, I am calling about the interview yesterday with Bill McKeever on the golden plate of Joseph Smith. And I'm concerned that you make sure and point out that when witnessing the Mormons, these kind of arguments alone are only going to make them into atheists. It's never going to, if those arguments were completely effective and a Mormon said, well, by gosh, you know, it turns out, well, indeed, these golden plates weren't real and Joseph Smith wasn't a true prophet. Mormonism is false. That really doesn't prove anything about Christ, and it's always important, as I know you always say, that we preach Christ crucified. And that's really what's going to change a Mormon's heart, and it's never going to help them to become a Christian merely to move away from Mormonism. Moving away from Mormonism could be a bad thing for them, possibly. It just sort of, I thought that needed to be mentioned because people are going to hear these arguments against Mormonism and they're going to run off and try and convert them all by disproving their prophet, and that's not necessarily helpful. Thank you, and I love the show.
Well, I would disagree that it's not helpful. I think it is helpful, but not and I would agree with you, it's not helpful necessarily in bringing about some sort of conversion to the Christian faith. It's two entirely different things. I would even say there's a difference here between apologetics, which would be showing that the truth claims of Mormonism centered around Joseph Smith and his claims about the plate and the Book of Mormon and all that stuff, showing that those are bogus is the apologetic task. But you're right. All that gets you is a Mormon who doesn't believe in Mormonism anymore, or an atheist, or an agnostic, or someone who doesn't know what to believe. That's all that gets you. That's why we always need to make the distinction between apologetics and what's come to be known as evangelism, or I would say preaching the gospel to someone who needs to hear the gospel. And it's not the gospel to tell them that Joseph Smith was a fraud. Was Joseph Smith a fraud? Yeah. Do they need to know it? Absolutely. But that's not the gospel. Not yet. And that is, you find someone who is mired in false belief, you repudiate the false belief, but if you do not replace it with the truth, have you really helped them? You've enlightened them. You've corrected them. But have you helped them? Much less have you given them anything that will save them? The truth of the matter is, Mormonism is false from top to bottom. And it would be false even if it didn't claim to be a way of salvation. It's false historically. But more importantly, it's false teaching. And we never repudiate false teaching, not just the history, but the salvation claims, without making the true salvation claims. The two work together. It's not an either or. It's both and. Well, when we come back from this break, we got 10 more minutes in this first hour of Issues, Etc. Live this Friday afternoon, May the 13th. A little more of your email, perhaps a comment, and then blog of the week. Don't you assume they're gonna buy just anything? 'Cause when we're out in the clubs listening to music, you're in the box, sex up in email. Dress on your email.
$500, yeah. Yes, there is a Messiah in Seattle. Messiah Lutheran Church and Concordia Lutheran School have served North Seattle for over 60 years, and we invite you to join us on Sunday mornings at 8 and 10:45 with Bible study at 9:20. Messiah Seattle is proud to support Issues, Etc. To learn more, watch our adult information class videos online or on DVD. Our website is messiahseattle.org, 206-524-0024.
Issues, Etc. regular guests, Pastor Matt Harrison, Deaconess Pam Nielsen, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be speaking at the Premier Worship Conference of 2011. Sing His Praise, His Love Declare. It's July 27th through the 29th on the campus of Concordia University, Nebraska. For more information on the worship conference, Sing His Praise, His Love Declare, visit Seward2011.org or call 402-643-2983.
Casting Christ's net on the Internet. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Muscoota, Illinois. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Grace Lutheran, Auburn, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Pleasant Plains, Illinois. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word, Rochester Hills, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Laramie, Wyoming. Redeemer Lutheran, Seymour, Indiana. Zion Lutheran, East Moline, Illinois. And Peace Lutheran, South St. Louis County. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues, Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues, Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. It's Friday afternoon. We're going through listener email and the Issues, Etc. comment line. I'm Todd Wilkin. Here's a comment about Mohammed, Joseph Smith, and Lady Gaga.
This is Herman calling May 13th with this apologetic reflection. We might ask ourselves here, what does Mohammed, Joseph Smith, the Mormon founder, and the homosexual advocate Lady Gaga have in common? They all appeal to a revelation from God for their positions without any corroborating proof. It happens within themselves, and there's no other source or witness to it in principle, but it's simply internally originated and a claim that it has objective validity and command of other people's lives, which is essentially how they state their propositions. Over against Scripture, which the Word of God says can neither be added to or taken away from, that God has completely spoken and identified Himself in a progressive succession from Genesis to Revelation, from the prophets and apostles, in a legally valid statement of witness beginning in the community of the Holy Trinity and also the company of the prophets and apostles, the witnesses and the martyrs. corroborated internally in Scripture and also with circumstantial imprints in world history that reflect that. That contrast with the statements of Mohammed, Joseph Smith, and Lady Gaga, exactly what God do they have? Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for the comment. I hadn't thought of Lady Gaga in that company, but I'd heard others, and again, smartest listeners in radio, I've heard others several times make the comparison, which is striking. It's a striking comparison between Joseph Smith, founder of Mormonism, and Muhammad, founder of Islam, even though these two men are found far apart in history and geography, and their truth claims, the particular truth claims, are quite far apart as well. Their claims about the source of revelation are remarkably the same. Their claims about the state of, what shall we say, Christianity when they received this revelation are remarkably the same. It just goes to show that really the devil, while he has a lot of tricks, he doesn't really ever have any new tricks up his sleeve. If something works, I mean, he's happy to recycle. The devil is the absolute master of recycling. If it works, if it ain't broken, he doesn't fix it. If it worked once before, he'll recycle the same old story again and again. And I imagine it just makes him laugh at how many, in the case of Mormonism, a lot, in the case of Islam, a lot more, how many fall for his tricks as tired and as worn out as they are.
Matt in Bloomington, Minnesota. Todd, Jeff, and everyone who makes Issues Etc. possible. I found Issues Etc. through my church bulletin. After looking up on the program on iTunes, I downloaded and played the most recent episode at the time. The show was great, and I wanted more. There were 301 episodes listed in iTunes, so I clicked the Get All button. To my surprise, over 3,000 appeared in my downloads. It took almost 2 hours, but I got them all. Since then, I've been working my way through one by one, starting with your return show from June 30th, 2008. You see, I do a lot of driving for work. Though it will take a while, I plan on listening to each and every one. I've got time. Thank you for the excellent program, concludes Matt in Bloomington, Minnesota.
Well, Matt, thank you very much. I'm glad you found us, especially glad that you found us through the Church Bulletin. That's one of the ways that we hope new listeners will always find us, and we depend on our existing listeners to make sure that Church Bulletin is there. By the way, it's always there. If you want to send it to your church secretary or pastor and ask them to put it in the bulletin, issuesetc.org, click support. Right in the middle of the page, there is a weekly updated church bulletin blurb about the upcoming programs and programs for on-demand listeners there that changes every week. And all you got to do is send it to your church secretary. Say, can we fit this in? It's one paragraph. It's not hard to fit in. I know there's precious little space in a lot of church bulletins, but as you see, people start listening. Now, as to the question of over 3,000 downloads, we're working on – that's a problem, actually, and we're working on it. I'm glad he was patient enough to let it all download, but we need to reduce the size of what people get when they click get all, because 3,000 is a lot of episodes to try and fit into
your
computer.
You said it got in 2 hours, though. I thought it would take longer than that.
Well, I mean, it's – I guess it all depends on how well he's hooked up to the internet, you know, how much bandwidth he's able to utilize there. And I'm glad he did.
But in his case, he wanted all of them.
Yeah, if he wanted them all. But what we're trying to do, just for those of you who may have been annoyed in the past, that file is huge when it comes to iTunes. We're trying to find a way to make it more manageable. But it also will mean that if you click get all, you won't get all. You'll only get some more recent programs. Most of our on-demand listeners, unless they're brand new, are probably keeping up more or less with what they do want to listen to on demand.
Quick email from Steve in Iowa. You stated that you often get messages from fans of the show who would prefer that you not talk about creation. Well, allow me to thank you for speaking about creation. I grew up assuming that not so much that evolution was true, but that the creation account from Genesis was allegorical. Over time, I have found myself, as you say, shoehorning more time in the narrative. Listening to your shows on creation has challenged my previously held allegorical understanding of creation and played a big part in my transitioning to a new earth creationist. In addition to bolstering my understanding of my authority of Scripture, a little understanding of the creation account has only positively affected how I read all of Scripture, and as a pastor, I believe it has improved my preaching. So I say keep the creation episodes coming. Thanks for the feedback, Steve in Iowa.
And we are doing a weekly series right now on Issues Etc. with Dr. Joel Heck, the author of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, called In the Beginning God, Creation from God's Perspective. We're doing it every week with him. We're trying to get through the book. It's a short book, and it's not compendious, but it is a good argument in favor of sticking with the text of Genesis chapter 1. I think what often happens is we too quickly depart from the text, or in some cases, we don't even deal with the text at all. We say, this is how it must have happened. Now let's see if we can fit it into the text. And if we can't, the text has got to go. Or we've got to, as I said before, shoehorn things that aren't in the text into the text. The text is not going to mislead you. If it seems incredible, well, to tell you the truth, honestly, that's your problem. It's not the text's problem. The obligation of the Christian is to believe what the text has to say.